now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thanks, Scott. I greatly appreciate your forecast and the news, of course. And I thank you for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly. But right now, if you have questions or concerns about your plants, remember just how many days ago it was 80-whatever? We were out sunbathing and everything else, and now, oh, my goodness gracious, just shows you what our weather is all about. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And on this Saturday morning, we get together and have a discussion about plant material, whether it's plant material in your yard, side yard, backyard, doesn't matter. Front yard, yes, even that. Or maybe your house plants. And what do you need to do if your house plants seem like they're getting squeezed in the pot it's in? Should they be repotted into a bigger pot? And if so, what should they be added to the pot? Should it be potting mix? Whatever. Should you be cutting anything this time of year? Should you be still looking for bugs and possible diseases? Well, the information I'm going to share with you hopefully will help you orchestrate and solidify your options. Of course, with that final judgment of the actions you're going to take is going to be on your shoulders. This is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your car or wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player is Ashlyn. She's producing, and she really likes pomegranates. So she's sharing pomegranate fragrance here in the studio. Oh, and by the way, I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994, and I can come to your home to do landscape consultations if you'd like for me to. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's an email address and a phone number. Now, that email address is still functional, but I'm going to be having sort of like blending in a new email address, and this will be my future email, and it's mmillerdesigns22@gmail.com. So my old email, I'm just really tired of it. Nah, it doesn't matter. But anyway, that's where I can be reached. Either phone number is plenty good. Well, let's get moving. The stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Giant sculptures or statues or whatever of purple coneflowers and monarch butterflies catches your eye while crossing the intersection of Kings Highway where Southwest Avenue begins. And on the building's south side, or the back side, there's rain barrels there that catches rainwater running off the roof. And a solitary bee house in memory of Pearl Bossing. And that's back on the back side, too. There's a redbud tree whose pea pods, redbud trees are in the pea family, but the pea pods, oh, they were wiggling in the wind this morning, I'll tell you. And the remaining leaves on several different trees were also wiggling like, oh, it is really cool. You can see a butterfly garden, a conservation corner, and then you can hear music created by a waterfall. It was so nice just to stand there on this little bridge and listen to the music of that waterfall. And there's a walkway that blends various things with broken glass. And no, it's not sharp or anything to walk on, but it is really kind of a neat walkway that kind of winds its way through this particular area. There's some hollies there that deciduous type hollies, and man, their red fruits were just exploding. There's a prairie garden. There's blue ageratum, the perennial varieties, and they say, "What snow? Who cares? I don't care how cold it is. I'm still going to be blooming and looking pretty darn good." And there's a rain garden with members saying, who could care less if it rains, it snows, or whatever? We love it. And, oh, I forgot how cold it was. It really felt cold this morning as I stepped outside. Yesterday was kind of an appetizer of the coldness, but today is really here. So anyway, where was I walking around? Brightside St. Louis. Brightside St. Louis is a really great organization that does a lot of things for our region. And one of them happens to be gets rid of graffiti off various locations. And so, I mean, they do that plus many, many other things. So Brightside St. Louis, right there at the corner of Kings Highway and Southwest Avenue. It's kind of a cool building and a great garden for sure. So if you just want to take some time to wander around a little bit. And all the perennials, other than the ageratum, were pretty much finished. And the ornamental grasses as well, but they were all kind of like just adding to the visual music of the wind this morning. So anyway, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. We'll be back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We have phone lines open if you have any questions about your lawn, what you should be doing or not doing, if you've got a warm season grass or a cool season grass, or should you be doing any pruning on your trees? Should you be having people come out, professional arborists, and take a look at your trees because of we've had some pretty darn strong winds lately. So it's really kind of, there's so much stuff going on in the outdoors. As I look out the back or our windows here, it's the backside of the Veterans Memorial, and the Missouri flag is pretty much really whipping hard. So, again, phone numbers 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's start the morning off with Mildred. Mildred, how are you today?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you for taking my call, Mike.
Sure.
I was calling because I had to have taken out a tree, a silver maple tree in my backyard. And it was just done over 2 weeks ago. And I had the root, stump taken out and everything.
Right.
So my question to you is, how soon can I start planting in that spot? And what does wood chipping, if you don't get it all up, I got up as much as I could, but how does wood chipping affect Georgia grass, that's what's down there and all, and how do I know when I can start planting in that spot where the tree was at?
Well, the exact spot, it's going to be several years before you're going to get anything to work in that location. And second of all, the stump grindings and things like that, any kind of raw wood, whether you're, somebody gave it to you or it's from your own yard and stuff like that, what it does is it starts breaking down. It binds up nutrients in the soil and it does some, it really can do some kind of bad damage, not just to lawn, but to lots of different kinds of plant materials. And, that's because it's doing damage to your soil, and then the soil is most important for, your plant material, whatever you happen to be growing. So, again, it's going to be a couple years before you're going to be able to plant on that spot. So maybe think about putting a bird bath or something there for a couple years. And then also the lateral roots, which are not, basically they don't know they've been beheaded. So they're going to continue to grow and for a little bit, absorb nutrients, absorb moisture, and it's gonna have an impact on your landscape just kind of in general. So you've kind of got a window of time where there's not too much you can really do.
Is there anything that I can do as a homeowner to make sure to kill those roots that might not have been, taken out?
No, because they go, however big this tree was, those lateral, feeder roots went out as, beyond where the width of the tree, where the branches were. I mean, they're way out there, so you really can't do anything.
Okay. Thank you so very much.
I mean, it's a sad circumstance, but it's reality, and that's kind of unfortunate.
What can you do to ensure, because I can only see with my naked eye and whatever, but what can you do to prevent the grass from, you know, the corrosion of the grass? Or is it just a process that has to go through?
Yeah, if you've had, you know, if you've had lawn over those particular areas and it hasn't been damaged by the equipment that came back to, you know, take the tree down and grind the stump out and everything else, because that soil compaction as a result of the equipment is going to have an impact also. So there's, I mean, there's multiple factors that play a role. So I would say probably the best thing you can do is your zoysia is basically dormant now. And so next year when it starts greening up, maybe have a lawn service come out and do some core aeration and spread some compost after the core aeration so it falls down in the holes from the core aerator. That will, you know, that feeds your soil, and then your soil will help your zoysia kind of, start the recovery process.
When you say core, I can't pronounce the word. Is that aeration of the soil this spring? Is that the same thing or no?
Yeah, it is. But a core aerator is a machine that pulls, actually plugs kind of like wine bottle corks out of the ground.
Uh-huh.
And then that makes a hole that is, a couple inches deep. And then when you spread the compost after that, then that falls down in the hole and it just kind of helps your soil just in general.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate your answers.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go from Mildred's yard over to Sue's yard. Hi, Sue.
Well, hi, Mike. I live in an apartment, and I have a small little flower bed area. And I've been throwing my coffee grounds in there. And I'm just wondering, just as a soil amendment. So I'm just wondering, is that gonna do anything to the soil or is that okay to do?
It's okay to do. It doesn't do. It's not a dramatic amount of things, as far as what it's going to do. It's going to it could have I don't know how long you've been doing it or how much you have 40 coffee pots of coffee a day or whatever it happens to be. It's not going to, it kind of changes the soil pH, but it's not, it's not something dramatic. And if you're just kind of dumping it on top of the ground and you're not mixing it in with the soil, then the benefit is even less.
Okay. So, yeah, it's a minimal amount, and I do mix it in.
Okay.
But it gives me something to do. I mean, I can't really compost something since I'm in this apartment. But,
right. I understand.
It's the least I can do. Now, one more question. The city put a tree in, a new maple tree. It's about 10 feet tall. And they left me instructions that said to water it twice a week for a year. And I have done that up until now. But with the cold weather, how important is it for me to get out there when it's really cold and give it, 10 gallons of water?
Right. I mean, I don't know why they would tell you to water twice a week for a full year. That's a little bit intense.
Okay.
I know it's a larger tree, and that's what the circumstance is. But if we're having rain or any kind of moisture or even humidity and things like that, the watering, I would say if you've been doing it for a couple months, then you can just kind of stop.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Sure. Good luck.
Okay.
And now let's go from Sue's yard over to Carol's yard. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Just wondering about, do I cut back my daisies and sunflowers and those things right now? That's my first question. And my other question is it okay now to winterize my roses?
It's probably a little bit early for winterizing your roses. I'd wait for, even though it's, it is getting a little bit, it's right kind of on the cusp of going below freezing and stuff. So if you can, if you haven't done it yet, I would say wait for another week or so. Wait till around Thanksgiving to do it. If you want to do it now, it's not going to cause that much damage to your roses. And I forget what your other question was related. Oh, cutting back perennials and things like that. If they finish blooming, and just make sure if you're cutting the stems off, that's fine. If they have any kind of green foliage on them, don't cut the green foliage off. So in other words, green foliage at ground level, not green foliage that happens to be kind of just hanging on a really tall stem or something like along that line. But probably I would think for the most part, most of the leaves, other than the ones that are kind of for perennial, you know, type plant materials that are at the base, at the ground level, then the ones that are higher up on stems are probably already turning brown. And you can cut that back.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's head over to Doug's yard. Hi, Doug.
Yeah, Mike. I winter over some hibiscus and other plants, and these plants are in pots that are big enough to where I need a two-wheel dolly to move them around.
Uh-huh.
And I have them in my garage, and I have three windows in my garage so they get sunlight. When I water the plants, I use a watering bucket with one of the sprinkler heads on it so I don't pour all the water in one spot.
Right.
How often should I water these plants?
I would say just, you know, monitor them or just watch them. And when you start to see the potting mix shrink away from the inside of the pot, then add water them at that time. And I'm assuming you have saucers underneath them, too.
Yes.
And so, you know, make sure that there's no water in the saucer if you water again. Because during the wintertime, even if you're getting adequate light in there and everything else, the amount of water or moisture that the plant materials need is going to be a far less than what it, you know, when they're actively growing outside in the summertime or in the warmer weather.
Well, using the watering can with the sprinkler head, I give the bigger ones probably about a half a gallon of water each time I water. And with the sprinkler head, it spreads it around quite a bit.
Right.
Is that a good thing to do?
Sure, that's fine. I mean, it just makes it easier on you as opposed to, like, if you just have a bucket, then you got to, you know, kind of move the bucket around yourself to make sure that you're getting moisture kind of evenly around all the potting mix and not just pouring it in one spot. Now, even pouring it into one spot, the water may spread as it's down into the potting mix, but the way you're doing it just kind of ensures that that's going to happen.
Okay. I thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go over to Doris's yard. Hi, Doris.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Good.
Have a question. Our lawn service called about doing a lime application to the yard. We've never done that before, and we're wondering what your thoughts are. They did a winterizing this past week, and now he calls about lime. And we're just wondering if that's something to recommend. We have a nice green yard most of the summer and that. And so what are your thoughts?
Basically, have you had a soil test done?
No, we haven't. My husband said that's probably what you'll say.
Right, because
test.
In essence, you don't put lime down unless you know that your soil pH is really acidic, because successful lawn needs pH, the numbers for pH is 0 to 14, and 7 is the neutral point. Anything less than 7 is slightly acidic, and the lower it gets, the more acidic it is. Anything above 7 is alkaline. So if you get a soil test done and it says your soil pH is 7 point something and you put lime down, actually you're doing really harm to your lawn. Because lawns like a pH slightly acidic, like at 6.5. So just to say to put lime down for the sake of putting lime down does not make sense unless you really know or the service knows what they're doing it for.
Okay. Makes sense. So, yes. So for now, we'll do a soil test before we do any lime.
Right. And, I mean, they're not hugely expensive. They're like $25 or so. And the University of Missouri Extension, I don't know what part of town you live in, but
we're in Arnold. So.
Okay. I mean, you can actually go to your county extension office and see, you know, find out or go online first and find out about how to take a soil sample. you know, and blah, 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 all that stuff. And then, you know, contact your county extension office in Jefferson County and see if you can drop the sample off there, or if you need to send it to University of Missouri in Columbia, or if you happen to be in Kirkwood, you know, for whatever reason.
Right, I know there's one in Kirkwood.
By the train station.
Right. Okay, all right. All good info. So thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure.
All right, bye now.
Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have phone lines open.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, we've got phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Vern's yard. Hi, Vern.
Hi, Mike. Thank you. Epsom salt. What can it be used for in the yard, the gardens? It's a pretty versified.
I would say you can use it, but it's not really an essential element. If you're doing the normal fertilizing and things along that line, you don't even need the Epsom salt. It's just one of the kind of the old ancient type things that people used in the past, and it's, you know, it helps a little bit, but it doesn't do a whole lot, to be honest.
No. Okay, I always have a bag of that left over, half a bag or so. All right, well, that's the only question. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it's you know, my wife has a bag of Epsom salts because her doctor told her to, she has a wound on her thumb, on her thumb, and the doctor said, soak it in Epsom salt water. And I thought, man, this stuff is pretty versatile. If it can take care of wounds, work in the yard and everything else. But that kind of means if it can do that many different things, that it's, you know, its reaction and action is going to be pretty minimal.
That'd be a green thumb then, I guess. All right.
Right, exactly.
Thank you, Mike. Have a good one.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Pat's yard. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Mike. I have oak leaf hydrangeas, and wondering when they get cut back, or did I miss the window for that?
You can cut them back if you want to, because they're summer bloomers. So, in essence, anything that blooms in the summer can be cut all the way up until springtime when the new growth starts, you know, occurring. So you can cut them back, or you don't even need to cut them back. That's, you know, the kind of nice thing of them. Now, they will get big over time. But in reality, it's one of those shrubs that, you know, routine pruning or things like that is really not necessary. If you want to cut off the spent flowers, that's fine. But anything else, I would say just kind of leave it alone.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. And again, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back to soil testing again. Oh, you got it. Everybody, he's always talking about soil testing. But here's a few things that keep this in mind. If you're taking a soil sample, make sure your sample is dry before you submit it to the, you know, if you're going to send it to the University of Missouri at Columbia, the agriculture department, or you're going to take it and drop it off, you know, someplace. There are private companies that will do soil testing, but it's got to be dry. So the night before you get your sample, what you do is you lay it out on a tray with newspaper or other, you know, kind of paper sources, and that will help it dry out. Because if you bring it, the sample, too wet into the office, they'll, you know, it's just, it's not good. Because you're going to put it in a Ziploc bag, that's going to make it, you know, even worse. And so just the drying process before it's shipped is really essential. And pull samples from various areas in your lawn. Let's say even if your front lawn, multiple locations, and you want to make sure that you, you know, don't get any kind of root systems or grass blades or anything like that. Or if it's in a garden area, a garden, let's say a vegetable garden, a perennial garden, any, you know, specifically different type of garden or lawn area should have a separate sample taken. So it's just, if you try to blend your whole yard together with, you know, gardens and spaces and shrubs and everything else, the soil test will not mean a darn thing. And you want to have at least about 2 cups of soil. That's what you want to submit. And it's, again, it's going to be dry, and it usually goes into a Ziploc sandwich bag or something along that line. And it takes about 10 to 14 days after you submit it before the, you know, before it's going to be, the sample is going to be tested and you're going to get the results. So, and again, if it's, if your soil is wet, you just add time to the whole factor. And then keep in mind, too, that they are extremely busy during the months of February, March, April, May, and June. So yeah, this is a perfect time. The ground is not frozen, so you can get the sample done. You can have it submitted. And before, you know, spring rolls around, when it becomes, you know, seasons for fertilizing or anything else, adding any kind of soil amendments, you're going to have that information right in your hand, so you know exactly what to do. So just, you know, soil testing is really extremely important. There's no getting around it. And now let's go over to Rich's yard. Hi, Rich.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, I got a problem with my front lawn. It floods every time it rains, and the water cascades down from the side of my house down the hill. And it just, all the grass is dead, the soil is eroding. Would you recommend like a French drain or something?
Yeah, I would have a landscape contractor come out and take a look at the circumstances, see what would be recommended. So is it coming down because of the downspouts off your roof?
No, it's just over the years, it's flooded. The rain just comes down. It's kind of a steep hill on the right side of my house.
Oh, okay.
It just collects on the front lawn. And, it's bad. There's no grass left.
Right. And it's not going to get any better, to be honest with you. So, yeah, I'd have a landscape contractor come out that, you know, has some expertise, because a French drain might be something that would be, you know, it would be the answer to your situation or to your problem.
Okay. Do they usually put that around halfway up the hill, or?
No, they run it at, basically they collect the water kind of at the base and then run it towards the street, so it discharges the, you know, the water that is collected, you know, in that direction, or they run it to wherever the lowest, you know, location is.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, thanks a lot.
Sure. And I mean, it's almost essential to do, because you obviously have, you know, seen what happens over time. It just makes it so you can't have any kind of lawn at all. And probably if it's too wet, then you're not even going to get very good weeds, except like, you know, nutsedge or something like that.
Right. That's exactly what I got. So I appreciate the advice. Thanks.
Sure. And just, you know, either go to your favorite garden center and ask them if they've got a company they'd recommend that, you know, can come out and have some expertise in drainage, because that's what you're really looking at. You're not looking for, you know, somebody that, you know, knows how to cut grass or, you know, trim trees or anything else. This is a drainage circumstance, which is...
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's very specific. All right. Thanks, Rich.
Got it. Thank you.
Yep. And now let's go over to Gary's yard. Hi, Gary.
Yeah, Mike, I got 2 houseplant questions. I've got a, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, it's a Kalanchoe plant.
Kalanchoe?
Yeah, it's got some really nice blooms on it.
Right.
But they said to deadhead them when they faded, but I wasn't sure how far down you deadhead them. Like petunias, they say go down to the way down on the stem. But
right.
I did that here, and it looked like it was a little bit too severe, and so I wasn't sure how far down I go on.
Basically, you just need to cut the spent flowers off. So,
oh, okay, yeah.
That's all you need to do. You don't need to cut down the stems or anything else.
Okay. Yeah, because the ones I cut way down, they look not too great.
Yeah, and they're probably, recovery-wise, is going to be scary at best.
Yeah, it's starting to grow up spindly, kind of.
Right.
On them. Okay, well, that solves that one. Then I got another question. I've got an avocado that I've It's about 2 years old now that I, you know, I just, for a lark, I grew with the toothpick method.
Right. In water.
Yeah. It's about a yard high now. And I got it in an 8-inch pot, but I didn't know if I should put it in a bigger pot or if it was good to disturb the roots or what.
Well, this time of year, I would not do that. If you want to put it in a bigger pot, I would wait until, like, let's say mid-March or so and use potting mix. And only get the pot about an inch or so bigger than what the existing pot is. And you really probably don't even need to. What you can do, I'm assuming you have it in a saucer, just, you know, pick it up and look at the drainage holes in the bottom and see if there's any root systems coming out of those drainage holes. If there's none, I would say don't repot it into a bigger pot.
Oh, okay, because I just threw not.
Right.
Yeah, it's in an 8-inch pot now with potting mix.
Yeah, you got probably multiple years, even if it's 3 feet high. I don't know how wide the branches are or anything.
No, each fond or whatever you call it, it's about a foot.
Okay. So 1 foot high, yeah, you definitely don't need to probably repot it into a larger pot for multiple years.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good news. Okay. Yeah, well, like I say, I just did it as a lark, and I didn't expect to succeed, actually. Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Mike.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks,
bye.
Gary. Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Morning, Mike.
Good morning.
You all right?
Yes.
Good. I have a downspout that drains, and it kind of drains down an incline from the corner of the house on out to the yard. And it tends to start to wash away dirt as it goes, especially when we get a heavy rain. And what I want to do is I want to bury a tile just not too far below the surface and hook the tile into it and run it on out to the corner of the house. To do that, I have to, there's a tree, and it has some roots that have been exposed. It's a sweet gum tree, and I know all the downsides to a sweet gum, but my wife loves the tree, so forget about getting rid of the tree. So what I was wanting to do was to, I wanted to know if I was to take my saw and cut a section out of those exposed roots at the top, you know, something about 4 inches wide through there, would that end up killing the tree, or are those upper roots just not as important maybe as those far down below the ground?
Well, actually, the roots that go further down below the ground are not really absorbing roots. So the ones that you're seeing along the surface, that's absorbing. The ones that go deeper just really keep the tree from toppling over. So in other words, because it would be top heavy. And so, I mean, I don't know how much you, as far as percentage-wise, how many of the roots you're going to have to cut, but it could do some damage. And when you said you're going to run a tile from this downspout, are you talking about a PVC pipe or something? Or are you talking about trying to lay tile on top of the ground and run it out to, you know, someplace that way?
Well, it would be like PVC pipe. I didn't want to run above the ground, which I could do. But if I do that, it means I have to mow around it all the time.
Right, exactly.
And once I get past the sweet gum tree, it's just dirt then. And it's not, I guess one thing I could do is run it above the ground until I got by the tree and then go down.
But, yeah.
The trouble there is I have to go under a sidewalk.
Oh.
And I can do that. I mean, I can dig straight down on either side of the sidewalk and go under it.
Right.
But once I do that, now I'm no longer above the ground until I get away about 10 feet. So I was just wondering, so I guess I'm taking the chance by cutting into these. There's probably 4 or 5 of them there. I guess I'm taking the chance just on that one side, killing the tree, huh?
Well, and that probably won't kill it. It just may weaken it and make, you know, if there's other factors that are, you know, adversely impacting your sweet gum tree, then, you know, the combination of the other factors, who knows what, you know, with our crazy weather and everything else. Let me ask you this, first of all, how big is this tree's trunk at ground level?
Oh, it's big. It's been there. This tree's been here for, I've got one out front that's even bigger, but it's probably, oh, I'm guessing the diameter of it. Oh, see, I look at it now. It's got to be a couple of feet.
Okay. So it's pretty old. So again, you know, I mean, the percentage wise, the, you know, all the nutrients and moisture and everything come from those surface roots and go up, you know, to help the tree stay healthy, wealthy, and wise, let's put it that way. But anyway, you could go ahead and try it, and then, you know, it may not do anything at all adverse, and just make sure that, you know, that you use probably the corrugated black plastic pipe as opposed to the white PVC.
Okay.
And a little bit more flexibility with it as far as your ability. But yeah, I'd probably put it under, you know, put it underneath the ground is probably more so than having some of it on the surface and some of it not on the surface, because some damage just even from exposure to the sun and everything else could happen to the part that's above the ground.
Right. Okay. All right. This spring then I'll give it a try and cross my fingers.
Good luck. And it's not going to be easy, as you well know. Sawing, you know, surface roots of trees is not a fun job.
No, well, I have a reciprocating saw that has a wood blade in it.
Oh, okay.
So with that reciprocating saw, the way it is, it's a DeWalt and it's a cordless. With that blade, it'll go through wood pretty easily, and then the dirt doesn't hurt it. But you're right, it won't be real easy, but I don't think it'll be bad with a reciprocating saw. The more difficult thing is going to be going under the sidewalk.
Right.
But I have a plan, and I talked to the contractor who poured the sidewalk. I asked him if I ran a tile under there, if it would be such that it would cause damage to the sidewalk. He told me, no, don't worry about it. So it'll be a job.
Well, good luck.
But it gets down the hill, though, Mike. It's washing away too much dirt, and it's cutting ruts in there. So I have to do something.
Right. And it sounds like the choice of your action is probably very smart, as opposed to just trying to get something, you know, ground cover or something like that to kind of cosmetically hide it, because you're still going to get the erosion.
Right, right. Okay, well, thanks for being there, Mike. Appreciate
sure.
it.
My pleasure. And Tom's on the line, but Tom, we're not going to be able to get to you because we're almost out of time for this hour. So if you'd like to hang on, you'll be the first caller at the as we come out of the news. And we do have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Boy, oh boy, wasn't it cool this morning? I don't know if you've been outside yet, but that breeze was nasty. Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline. See you after the news.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott, and welcome to the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour. I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about your plant material, your lawn, anything related that is living, and maybe some of the stuff that's living that you don't like, how do you get rid of it? Like honeysuckle. Anyway, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. And maybe have some ideas you'd like to share, or maybe questions, concerns, or comments. And thanks for having me on your show. We can discuss all those kind of things related to annuals. Boy, the pansies, they could care less about this cold. I've got three pots of pansies and small pots. But I'll keep watching them and see what the cold has done to them, that snow and everything. And the bulbs, you still got time to plant some daffodils, tulips, crocus, and things like that. So until the ground freezes, you can go ahead. And, I mean, some of the places got some of the bulbs actually has reduced prices. And your cool season vegetables. How about your ground covers? Can you still do anything with that? Or your houseplants? What you should you be fertilizing your houseplants? How about your lawn, your roses, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines? Oh, I said roses twice? Oh, those roses, yes. A lot of roses. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take towards success, but strictly offered for you to consider. Across the big board is Ashlyn. She answers the phone and produces and pushes all the buttons and everything else and has just a good time doing it. So she really likes her job. And I do landscape consultations, which I call a walk and talk. If you'd like for me to come to your home and do a walk and talk, a landscape evaluation, answering questions you have, and I'll keep my eyes open for things that might be impacting your landscape. You go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be contacted. And also, I have another email, MMillerDesigns22@gmail.com. I'm in the transition time, and slowly but surely, I'm going to have that as my main email. But anyway, when I come to your home, I'll share 40-plus years of experience that relates to the world of plant material. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for individual group or a situation that's made an impression on me and is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. A couple weeks ago, as I was leaving the station, I went past City Hall, and I could tell there were people planting, daffodil bulbs. And who these were, these people, guess what? They're volunteers. Volunteer for Brightside St. Louis. And Brightside St. Louis has orchestrated the planting of over 40,000 daffodils at numerous locations. And volunteers from numerous companies and organizations stepped out to help do that. So that's the neat thing about it. Along with Charles Brennan, too. He's been associated with the daffodil planting for several years. And what it is Brightside St. Louis is a great organization. They not only do the daffodil planting, but they also get rid of some of the graffiti. Some of the graffiti is just obnoxious as heck. And so they've got some staff members that go around and eliminate graffiti. It's a wonderful organization just in general, as I said before, beyond the daffodils. So they're really conscious about kind of down-to-earth type things here in the St. Louis metropolitan area that have a real good impact. So you kind of forget about the daffodils, and then all of a sudden, wow, you come in this, it's springtime and the ground's starting to warm up. You start to see yellow, and you start to see, that was Brightside St. Louis that planted those. The volunteers for Brightside St. Louis. So it's orchestrated by their staff, and then it's just a great, wonderful job. And this was the first year, probably in a decade or two, that I've bought some daffodils, but I always get tulips from Brightside St. Louis. But because my computer was down this year, I wasn't able to order any. So I'm going to be a little bit sad when spring rolls around. But I'll be sure to find out for close to my home where Brightside has, their volunteers have planted some daffodils, and I can go by and just kind of have a nice, fresh breath of yellow daffodils. So anyway, if you do have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's get Tom in before we take a break. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Very good.
Did you walk in those shorts today?
Of course. Now, I did. Now, I did have, I have socks and shoes on. Yesterday, I didn't. And so, but today I thought, it might be a little bit cold for flip-flops.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Well, that wind didn't help you.
No.
I've got a couple questions for you. The first question is, the good news is I've got two, I guess I call them like in the palm family tropical plants, but they're plants, they're not trees. And I got a ficus tree, and they're huge. so big I couldn't really get them into my house this year.
Uh-oh.
And so I know, but they're so pretty. And so I have them in my garage, and I've never done it in my garage to try to store them over the winter. And I was hoping you could give me some suggestions on how this will work. I was looking at if there's some sort of a hot something that's warm that you could put underneath so they wouldn't be sitting on the garage, you know, concrete. So what are your suggestions on keeping them alive?
So you have an adequate light for them, first of all?
I've got two windows that I can open up the shade, so there'll be light that will come in the garage.
Okay, so you don't really need heat, but what you definitely need to do is get them up off the concrete floor. And I have some pots that I keep, in my garage too, and I just have some wood pallets, and I just set them up on the wood pallet. That's all I do. Now I do have some grow lights that I put on them. But I have, grow lights in the basement for plant material, too. But that's all I do is I set them up on the pallet and, put some grow lights on them, and that's pretty much it.
Okay. But you do recommend the grow lights?
Well, you don't have to. It just depends. Like, I don't know if you've had – how long you've had these plants, especially like the ficus tree. You know how many leaves they drop during the wintertime. When the situation is ideal and it's going to be less than ideal, I don't know what direction these windows that you have in your garage are facing, how much light they're actually going to get, and those kind of things.
They face north.
Okay, so that's the least amount of light possible. So
right.
your palms, should be okay, but the ficus tree is going to go, ooh. So
get the grow lights.
Yeah, that will help, but it's still not going to guarantee, you're still going to lose some, foliage off the ficus trees, regardless. And you can get grow lights either, fluorescent type, or you can get the type that are kind of just bulb type.
Okay. The other thing is that, it's the future forecast is still not much rain. What do you think about continuing the water?
Definitely cut back on the watering. It's just, especially in a lower light situation, too much moisture could actually have an adverse impact on the root system. So I would say, again, I always like to tell people, just look at the inside of the pot, and if you start to see a gap between the potting mix that it's growing in and the inside of the pot that they're growing in, consequently, then I would water them and, make sure that you have a saucer underneath the pot, too, so it doesn't just run all over the place after you pour some water in them.
Well, I was referring more to plants outside.
Oh.
Because I transplanted a few. I've got I think it would be a dwarf blue spruce that gets to be 8 to 10 feet tall. And I transplanted it because it didn't do very well in the first spot that I put it.
Okay.
And so, I was going to maybe throw some mushroom compost around it, and then I didn't know about the watering with it being this cold.
When it is this cold, the watering is not necessary, but make sure that, you've been watering it up to this point, because remember, only a few days ago it was 80 degrees.
Right.
And so, that's detrimental to the root system just kind of in general. So through the wintertime, just kind of if we have a stretch that's, let's say, extra windy, and even if the temperatures are, low, not necessarily freezing or anything else, to take a 2-gallon bucket of water or a gallon bucket of water out, after of 10, 14, 20 days of no rain or anything and no snow, then I'd probably go ahead and water.
Okay. Okay. Well, I appreciate your input. Thanks, Mike. Enjoy
sure.
your day.
My pleasure. And bye. Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, after the show today, I head towards home if I don't have an appointment for a walk and talk in somebody's yard. Today, I do not. But what I do is usually work around the yard, do blah, 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 blah. But today I'm going to be working in the garage because my garage is chaotic as a result of taking all the large pots and everything that I've had of my summer bulbs, you know, elephant ears, cannas, Kaffir lilies and things like that growing in. And now I need to get them a little bit more organized and pull some of them out of the pots, let them dry, and then take them. I take some inside into the basement. This year, I'm going to leave some in the pots and leave them in the garage and see what happens. I want them to go dormant. I don't want them to keep growing necessarily, so I'm not putting them in front of a window. And then I have, as you probably, if you've been listening, know that I've left some elephant ears out in my yard. And historically, I've never done that before, but I have so many because I've been growing them for so long, and they've just kept multiplying and multiplying and multiplying. I decided, let's see how tough these guys are and see if they can survive our winter outside. So that's my summer bulb update. Let's go now to Kurt's yard. Hi, Kurt. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well, thanks.
Good.
So I bought a building out Ullman Row, and it had a a tree on it that, you know how sometimes like two trunks will kind of come out of that same location in the ground.
Sure.
So it's this over a course of, let's say, three seasons now. One of those was dead, so I cut it off. The one that was alive, I left alone. The next year, which was this summer, it fruited up, and it had 1,000, and I thought there were going to be peaches, just 1,000 on there. And then it got really hot, and all of a sudden, all that fruit dropped within, about a three-day period. It's an old tree and kind of overgrown, and I didn't even know it was a fruit tree because that first year it didn't really have any fruit on either one of those forks. And, you know, I thought that it was peach. It smelled like peach and kind of tasted like peach, but, I mean, they were probably the size of a golf ball or a ping pong ball when they all hit the ground. So I guess what I'm wondering is, should I be trying to prune that thing down, or what happened to all the fruit that was on there? I'm just trying to make it a tree I could get something off of. That's kind of where I'm at.
Okay. Basically, what you need to do is you can enjoy the flowers of any kind of fruit tree that you want. But generally, if they're, you know, somewhat healthy and everything else, they produce way too many flowers, which if it gets pollinated, that's too much fruit for them to function and actually grow. So in the future, go ahead and let them flower. If you start to see the fruits form before they get, you know, beyond, let's say, a marble size, take about 50 or 60% of those fruits off before, you know, they grow. And then hopefully the tree will have enough energy coming up from the root system to be able to, you know, allow the fruit to actually get edible size. So what happens?
How would I know?
What's that?
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm just wondering, how would I know if it was an apricot or a peach? The pits on them were smooth, but I felt like they were still way underdeveloped, and it kind of smelled more peach than apricot.
Well, as, you know, probably I would, you know, take a look at the foliage. And then go to the university or go to Missouri Botanical Garden website and just take a look at the, you know, because they're going to have information on the fruit trees and see which one that you happen to have there.
Would it make any difference, or is what you're saying kind of the same no matter which way that tree was?
Yeah, it would. That's the same thing, whether it's an apple tree, a cherry tree, a peach tree, an apricot tree, anything. They always produce, you know, in general, if it's a gentle winter, they produce a lot of flowers and produce, you know, ultimately, because the flowers are going to get pollinated, start producing fruit. But it's much too many fruits for most of the trees to be able to function and be able to grow completely to full, let's say, edible size. So
how much could I prune this down? Could I prune it down substantially, or should I not?
I would say stay away from it. You start pruning, especially something like a summer bloom or a spring bloomer, like, you know, fruit trees are, then you're eliminating the potential for, you know, definitely flowers / fruits next year. But also, if you cut it back too far, you may be cutting it back to the point where it doesn't have the ability to produce any kind of flower buds, you know, for the future. You may be just sending it downhill.
So just wait till the spring and then try to figure out how to knock some of the buds off or some of the fruit off, depending on what time I catch it.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Well, thanks for the help, and enjoy your show. I've never really been a gardener. I grew some tomatoes out here that grew like crazy too, but just kind of reminds me of my dad who's gone, and he was a gardener, so... enjoy listening to your show.
Well, great. Well, thanks. Greatly appreciate it. Remember, if you weren't there, I would not be here. So thanks, Kurt. And now let's head over to Patty's. Hi, Patty.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I wanted to let you know, you stressed the soil testing, which is very important for yards and gardens and everything. But the St. Charles County Extension Office does offer soil testing, too.
Great.
For all the people in St. Charles County, we're at 260 Brown Road, which is just west of Old Town St. Peter's, so they can bring their soil samples to us, too.
And then you send them, or you actually do the testing there?
We send them to Columbia.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, well, that's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd just be a whole lot closer for people to go to St. Peter's instead of Kirkwood.
Right. Exactly. So if anybody else has any information on local, you know, local people that they can drop stuff off, you know, generally the county extension services will do that. But this sounds great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of them. So and we can always do more.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Even though the weather's getting cold outside, you know, there are some annual cool season weeds that say, who cares if it's cold? Whether it's henbit, dead nettle, chickweed, annual bluegrass, and lots of other ones. They germinated last August, and they do great, and they keep growing and growing and producing flowers and dropping seeds and everything. Oh, what a heartache that is. They don't care how cold it gets. They may shut down a little bit if it gets really, really cold. But as soon as it warms up a little bit, then they start producing those seeds. So just keep that in mind. The cool season annual weeds, they love this kind of weather. Let's head now over to Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike, how are you? You got a great name. Hey, anyway, I've got six or eight mums that are in pots, and I was, you know, ready to throw them away. I'd like to transplant them, and, you know, is there any easy way or just stick them in the ground or what, you know?
Well, just, you know, the soil's got to be really prepared, and I'm assuming you bought them, you know, already in the pots, and they were probably budded, if not flowering. And just you know, basically look at where the stem is coming up out of the, you know, the potting mix and see if there's any little green leaflets right at ground level. If there is, then I would go ahead and, you know, try transplanting them. And you don't need to cut the top off or anything. I'd probably leave everything as is. And what happens is if there was those little leaflets there, that indicates that it has a good, you know, possibility of, you know, coming back next year. Now, to get it thick and bushy, there's a whole involved process with doing that. But just, you know, so it survives. And the reason why I'm saying don't cut the top, you know, the top existing already spent flowers or stems or water or leaves or anything else off is because it'll offer some protection for those little leaflets at the bottom. If you don't see any leaflets right at ground level near the, you know, basically attached to the stem, then I wouldn't bother with that particular one. It's not going to be able to survive.
Thank you very much, because nothing worse than digging a hole that you didn't need to dig, right?
Exactly.
If I did find one or two or whatever that's good, what kind of mix would I give in it? Or
you know, they like well-drained soil, and they like an organic soil. So add some compost into the area. And with existing soil, don't just, you know, try to put it in, let's say, pure compost or a topsoil compost mix if you want to add that to the existing soil. Just make sure that you're blending in with the existing soil.
Great. Are they pretty hardy, or are they, was it kind of like a hit-and-miss type thing if you do that?
Once you buy them and they've already been grown, and it's really going to be a hit-and-miss circumstance. But you can avoid the trouble or the hassle if you don't see those little green leaflets at the stem. That's a whole key to survivability.
Thank you very much, and you really helped because you might have saved me some backache. Okay, thanks, Mike.
Sure.
I love your show. Bye now.
My pleasure. And now let's go over to Brad's yard. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Mike. Am I too late to bring in my elephant ears and my cannas bulbs?
No, not at all. I mean, they've probably been damaged due to the cold, but for the most part, the root systems, the bulbs or the tubers are still fine because they're below ground. You're just seeing kind of damage to the above ground growth, but no, you can definitely do that.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for your help.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah, so whether they're in the ground or whether they're in pots, the bulbs, the tubers, bulbs are for the elephant ear, tuber is for the canna. But they're both just root systems. And now let's see, where should we go? Let's go over to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question. I heard you talk about planting bulbs in pots. So I planted my tulips in pots. Will those pots survive outside, or do I need to put the pots in the garage?
No, I do them and leave pots outside. So I have large pots, and I make sure that there's a couple inches between the edge of the pot, the outside edge of the pot, and the first series of bulbs I put in there. But I've been doing it for years and years and years and years.
Well, I heard you say the 2 inches, and I did that. But then I didn't hear you say, well, you can leave them outside. And I'm thinking, I didn't go to all this work. And
Yeah, I leave mine outside, and like I say, if there's an extended period where it's kind of dry, no rain or snow or anything, but so I go out, occasionally have to water, but for the most part, I don't even need to do that because we do have adequate rainfall through the wintertime, and you don't want them to dehydrate, by being outside or even in the garage. You still got to water them, so you should be fine.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's see what's going on in Matt's yard. Hi, Matt.
Oh, good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good.
Mike, I got a rosemary plant. It's about 25 inches tall. I took it out of the garden and I got it potted. And I'm just kind of wondering, what would you suggest to store this thing? I've got a patio, but there's no heat out there, or the garage, basement, or in the house. What do you suggest?
Well, if the rosemary are pretty tough. So if you've got, even outside, so it's a covered patio, I'm assuming, with...
Yes.
So, I mean, it has windows and everything. It's not just...
A lot of sunlight, too.
Okay. Then I would say, try the... Just put the pot out there on the in front of the brightest window and just kind of watch it. They don't need a whole lot of, water during the wintertime. And since you've dug it up, it's a little bit iffy. Just from that standpoint, but that's probably what I would do.
Well, how much water would you suggest? Once a week or something like that?
Not necessarily. I wouldn't do it that often because herbs really want to be on the dry side as opposed to too much moisture. But it's going to be sitting in a saucer, and what you can do is just water all the way around so all the root systems can get some moisture and just kind of forget about it. And then, a month or two, 5 weeks later, then go out and water it again.
Okay, fine, Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go over to Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good.
Hey, I had a question on, I dug up my cannas and my banana trees and cut them back before, the stringy roots that are attached to the bulb. Do I leave those on there, cut them off, or does it not matter?
You can leave them on there if you want. They're really not going to do anything. So they're kind of the feeder roots that absorb moisture and nutrients and things like that. But the bulb, when they're planted again, will produce new ones. But you can leave them.
Okay, so then I'll just leave on that because they're on there now. And I was like, I wonder if I'm supposed to cut those off.
Yeah, it's not necessary to do. When you buy them, at the garden center or whatever, you'll see that all that stuff has been cut off, but that just makes it a little bit more appealing, but it's not necessary to do.
Okay, and in your opinion, how deep should a tulip bulb be planted?
A tulip bulb, basically like 4 inches.
Okay, great. I enjoy your show, and thanks for everything.
Sure, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on your show. And let's see, can we get another one in before we take break? Kathleen, how are you?
I'm fine. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Let's get back to those elephant ears. I still have mine in pots. I turned them over. I haven't dumped them out. I still have a lot of green foliage. Do I just chop that off and clean the bulbs?
Yeah, you can do that, or you can just wait until – I just prefer to chop them off while they're still green and vibrant as opposed to – if you leave them out there, it's going to get, and it gets below freezing, then those, the above ground growth of stem and leaf, they just get really mushy, and I just don't, care for that, so.
Okay, so I can chop everything off, clean the bulb, bring it in.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yep, and just cut the stems and, off right at ground level, and once you pull it out of the pot, or the potting mix or whatever, and you see there's still a little bit of a stem, you can just go ahead and leave that. You don't have to cut it off anymore, but because it's just going to dry up anyway during the wintertime.
Okay. Now, when cleaning it, just wash it in water. Do I need to put any type of, something on it to keep it from rotting?
No, you don't need to wash it in water. Just, pull it out of the pot, shake all the potting mix off of it, and just let them dry. So in other words, put them on newspaper or something before you store them in like paper bags for the wintertime.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, don't water them. I mean, don't use water to wash them. That's too much trouble.
Okay. Thank you again.
Yep, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMWatch Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go. Let's go over to Margaret's yard. Hi, Margaret. Margaret, are you there?
My question is about my hydrangea. I guess they're gone dormant, but it's big brown, how they look, bulbs on there. Should I cut that off or just leave them alone?
Well, you can leave it if you want. A lot of people just cut them off because they don't like to look at them for the entire wintertime.
But it won't hurt them if I just leave it.
Yeah. No, basically next year, all those brownish petal things are just going to fall off.
Now, for the winter, should I put the leaves on? Is there anything else I can put over it to kind of cover it up, or do it need covering?
Depending upon the variety and how long they've been in the ground, you don't necessarily have to put mulch, but a couple inches of mulch would not hurt.
Okay. All right. And then you talk about that Irish Spring soap. Is that good for squirrels?
Squirrels, no.
What about rabbits?
Basically not, because with the deer, you can hang them from something, but, to just lay the Irish Spring soap on the ground, you might try it, and then you can call and say, it worked really well. It sent all the rabbits and squirrels out of my gardens, but for the most part, it's basically what deer is the only thing it's recommended for.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your service.
Sure. My pleasure. But no, if you want to try it,
I'm going to try and see.
Yeah, why not?
All right. Thank you.
Yes. And now let's head over to Art's yard. Hi, Art.
Yeah, Mike. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
My question might be a little bit deeper than the 4 inches of our topsoil. It's got to do with carbon sequestration. we hear about soil carbon, but then when you think about putting excess of CO2 injected into the soil, what does that do to the microorganisms as far as your subsoilers? By that, my friend is sort of religious. He says if you don't have a percolation rate of a 2-inch rainfall in 12 minutes, you don't have holy ground. You weren't blessed. In other words, you don't have the worms and you don't have the moles and other types of microorganisms that might be under the soils. What do you feel is the right appropriation when they talk about carbon sequestration? I'm for more trees, hopefully more plants, anything green. But as far as actually taking electrostatic precipitators off of smokestacks, injecting that into the soils, I don't believe that's very healthy.
Yeah, it's probably not, Art. Thank you very much for your call. I greatly appreciate it. Now let's head over to Laura's. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I was wondering if it's too late to plant tulips.
No, it's not. The ground hasn't been frozen yet, so you can plant any of your spring flowering bulbs all the way up until the ground freezes. So you've still got who knows how long it's going to take for the ground to freeze because the air is, I mean, just now going below freezing. So it could be you might have another couple weeks before the ground starts freezing.
What about peonies and dahlias? Are those spring only?
Basically, the peonies, the dahlias are actually a summer, you know, bulb, and the peonies are a perennial plant. So they're two different things.
Okay.
And so with the dahlias, you plant those when they're available. If you don't have them yet, you plant them when the garden centers start having them. You can either get the bulb, but there are some other dahlias that you buy in pots and just plant those. And then all with the peonies are going to be available in pots probably around May or so.
I think I have some tubers, though, of peonies. And I want, so if I do in my basement, can I still plant them?
Wow, if you've had them, I would think that they have been dehydrated if they're up out of, you know, just in say, paper bags or something like that. I mean, you could check them, but for the most part, they do have eyes on the root system and things like that, but the peonies shouldn't be pulled up out of the ground.
Okay. No, I didn't pull them up. I bought them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so definitely get them planted then. I misunderstood where we're headed.
No worries. Well, thank you very much. I just wanted to make sure before I spent the time.
Yeah, just make sure it's well-prepared soil, and with the peonies, you want to have those eyes about any place between a half inch to an inch below the surface. If you plant them too deep, they're going to push out foliage, but they're not going to flower for you.
Okay. All right. Understood. Well, thank you so much. Love your show.
Thanks.
All right.
It's your show, as you know. And the season is almost over as far as the growing season. I was really surprised when I walked around Brightside St. Louis and saw the ageratums still looking good. Other things that are, you know, perennial wise that I still have seen flowering. There's a few purple cone flowers that I even have in between my garage and the alley. And it's, you know, the main part of the, you know, plants are pretty much gone. Milkweed pods are there, but there's no more milkweed flowers. But one thing that is that has been flowering that I didn't get a chance to check a yard where I know there's a bunch of it growing is asters. They are really extremely tough and durable. And, I mean, this time of year, they're so striking because of their color. But if you want to have something that can take, you know, some of the crazy weather that we have, whether it be 80 degrees and then 5 or 6 days later it gets down to this, I think probably the asters would probably be my choice above most of the fall blooming flowers. So whether it be mums or anything else, the asters just seem to be by far the toughest. And just you still got plenty of opportunity with your zoysia, maybe the final cut. you can go ahead and mow. And with the bluegrasses and fescues, the cool season lawns, you want to keep mowing those routinely, even though we've gotten to this point where we're starting to feel the cold. They can still be growing because they're a cool season lawn. So you don't want the blades on the cool season lawn to get too long, because then when we get snow or anything, it's going to, you know, sort of cause those blades to lay on top of each other. And that's where a lot of the fungus problems come from, the fact that we, you know, have just kind of like, well, it's this, you know, this time of year, and I'm going to put the mower away and I'm not going to cut again. But with a cool season lawn, you need to. The zoysia, you don't necessarily have to, but it wouldn't hurt if the blades are a little bit longer than like 3 inches would be about the maximum I'd want to have. You say, well, how do you know how long they are? Well, you just pull a blade up and see, kind of see. So, I mean, you don't have to stay right with that measurement type stuff. Other things that you can be doing this time of year is just enjoying some of the still fall color that's out there. When I was coming down to the station today, there was someplace around the botanical garden in somebody's yard, a red maple that was so strikingly beautiful. It was still holding all of its leaves. It was unbelievable. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.